Morning, Jay. How are things?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We've sat here, and just because of the ridiculousness, seemingly, of it, we've not spent a lot of time talking about the PSI of footballs,
yeah,
or inflation or deflation or whatever, but I know you wouldn't have that luxury because of the magnitude of the story.
Yeah.
I guess, what have you learned this week out of this whole scenario?
You know, I've learned that the Patriots, through some of their past actions, Spygate, and you know, some other allegations that have come along, are under a unique spotlight, a sort of a unique scrutiny, and that if they are found to have blurred the rules here, or cheated in any way, or tried to gain some advantage outside the rule book, then I think they're going to get hit with a pretty strong penalty. Now, do I think that penalty will actually equate to the level of the crime? I'm not sure, because I don't know that what they're doing is all that dramatically different than what's going on in a lot of places, and sort of what's part of quarterback culture, which is these guys want to ball a certain way. They're finely tuned professionals. They're very anal and meticulous about how they want the ball to be. And yeah, there's some rules about that, but you know, in pitchers, in baseball, there's pitchers who are rubbing more dirt on the ball than you're supposed to, or doing a little more pine tar gets on there than is supposed to, and you don't see, you know, people being fined and losing draft picks over it. In baseball, you've got batters. They want their bat a certain way. Some guys are putting on more pine tar than you're technically supposed to, but other than the George Brett incident from, like, 1982, you don't hear a damn thing about it. So I think part of it is the Patriots' pass catching up with them. Timing is certainly a huge element here, in that it happened on a national stage, an international stage, in a championship game, and it got very public very quickly. And again, they're going to be looked at through a different prism because of Spygate and what they've done in the past. But do I think it really has a big effect? No. And I talked to a lot of quarterbacks yesterday over a bunch of generations, and none of them really thought that there was much of anything to this. They thought it was sort of getting a little bit of an advantage, wanting the ball to be a certain way, but you're still out there playing the game, and the Patriots completely dominated in every facet. They could have run the ball 70 times and never thrown a pass or won that game.
Can you explain even the rule? What is the rule, and why does the league not take care of the balls?
Well, they do. I mean, if a game like that, the home team supplying 24 balls, the visiting team is supplying 12. They scuff them up, they rub them up, they put whatever they think they can put on there. They get them to a certain degree of deflation or inflation, how they like them. And then the league checks them all a couple hours before the game. And they mark them and they sign off that they're okay. And then they were returned to the sidelines. And then when they're on the sidelines, you've got ball boys and all kinds of team personnel running around. And the allegation here is that once those balls have to be within a certain, you know, pound per square inch, PSI, there's a certain range it has to be in. The Patriots' balls, when they were checked at halftime, were found to all have been, you know, 1 to 2 PSIs lower than what they were supposed to be. So the implication is somebody on that sideline doctored those balls after they had already been checked by the league's officials. I mean, the easiest way to have this not be an issue would be after they're checked by the officials, they go in a ball locker, right? And there's an NFL personnel who sits there, not somebody paid $2 an hour by a team to be a ball boy, and they handle the distribution of balls. But that's not how it works. So there has been sort of this loophole here and sort of the ability for teams to get back at those balls after they've been checked. And the Colts are saying something was off. I had a story earlier this week where Ravens officials were telling me, hey, when we played there a week before, something was weird with the kicking balls, and we weren't getting our distance on kickoffs and punts. And, we think something's going on there. And I'm told that Ravens personnel alerted Colts personnel to be on the lookout for this. The Colts coach, Chuck Pagano, was the Ravens defensive coordinator before he took that job. He was a longtime assistant with the Ravens and still has a lot of strong ties to guys on that coaching staff. So there had been something sort of percolating about, hey, these balls in New England don't exactly seem to be doing everything we want them to do. They seem to be a little deflated. But, you know, the league controls the kicking balls for the most part. They don't control the way balls are sort of handled on the field once the game gets going. But I look, we've got a league meeting in March. I guarantee you the competition committee, it won't take much to close this loophole. I mean, it won't take much. You put a ball locker on the sidelines. You got, you know, you mark, this is the home team balls, this is the visiting team balls, and then an NFL employee who has no skin in the game distributes the balls.
There's got to be a part of Bill Belichick that almost...
He's giggling inside.
Yeah, wouldn't he appreciate a little bit of it? That it's... I mean, I just look at it in baseball or really in any sport. If you're always kind of looking for an edge... I remember Buck Showalter, you know, if he knew he had a ground ball team coming in, he'd tell the infield crew to leave the grass a little bit longer just to kind of deaden the ground balls. I mean, you're always looking for the edge. Where's the line between you're a cheater and, oh, you're very savvy and very good at trying to find that competitive edge?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I talk to so many quarterbacks to say, like, even if some ball boy there did suck one PSI or two PSIs out of that ball or whatever was going on, like, would you be upset about it? I mean, I talked to Rich Gannon. I don't know if you saw the story that came out about when the Raiders played the Bucs in the Super Bowl. There was this story that Brad Johnson, the Bucs quarterback, paid some guys $7,500 so he could scuff the balls in that game the way he wanted. And Gannon was the losing quarterback in that game and threw four or five touchdowns. I talked to Gannon for a while yesterday. He's like, look, I talked to Brad Johnson the Monday before that game, and we were both complaining about how crappy the game balls were. And we were both looking to try to get those balls the way we wanted. He's like, no, I don't know that he bribed anybody to do it, but if he did, he's like, I'm not mad at him. We both played with those balls. Those balls didn't feel markedly different than any other ball to me. He's like, that's not why we won or why we lost. He's like, when we used to go to Pittsburgh, back in the old days, they would take 24 balls out of the box and that would be it. You wouldn't get a chance to mess with them before the game. You wouldn't get to bring your own balls to the game. And he's like, in Pittsburgh, we'd go there. Cordell Stewart was their quarterback. He couldn't really pass. Those balls would have stuff all over them. They were super slippery. They knew we wanted to throw the ball 40 times, and they wanted to run it 40 times. And we'd go there, and invariably, the ball would be impossible to get a handle on. I'd have to wear a glove. I'd have to do something else.
Yeah.
So he's like, is that really different than this? I mean, I was having a hard time finding people within that subculture of quarterbacking who were up in arms about this.
Yeah. He's Jason Lackenfor. He's our NFL insider. And it's funny, Ryan across the table, he says, you know what, the one thing that we've not heard anything of this week, while everyone's been talking about PSI and inflated or deflated balls, is the Seattle Seahawks and the miraculous nature in which they advanced to the Super Bowl. No one's really talking about where they're at right now.
Yeah, I think they're perfectly fine with that. You know, it's funny, they're the Super Bowl champions, but if you heard any of the post-game press conferences after the game on Sunday, or if you watched, you know, NFL films where they've got guys wired in the game and on the sidelines, if you saw inside the NFL or anything like that, you'd think these guys were a Pop Warner team. I mean, they've got this chip on their shoulder, like, nobody believes in us and nobody believed we could do this and we're the underdogs and nobody gives us a chance. And I'm like, bro, I just watched you guys hold the Lombardi 12 months ago. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You were the number one seed in the NFC. But I think this whole thing just plays into that mentality. Like, that's great. Everybody wants to talk about how much air is in Tom Brady's ball. Everybody wants to talk about Spygate. Everybody wants to talk about the Patriots. We're just going to keep doing our thing out here. We're going to practice for 2 weeks, and then we're going to go out there and punch people in the mouth and show them how we play football. And I credit that coaching staff immensely for that team retaining its edge, because there's a reason why people don't repeat in this league. There's a reason why it's so hard to do it. It's hard to have that same motivation when you've been to the top of the mountain. And these guys stumbled a little bit early, but since they got, you know, Percy Harvin out of there and kind of reclaimed that locker room and management kind of sent a message about what they're going to tolerate and what they're not, they've taken off. They've bonded, and they sort of have this air of, well, you guys wrote us off, let us show you. And again, sometimes that's hard to manufacture after you've literally just been to the pinnacle.
On that note, who is, in your mind, most responsible for, like you say, us against the world? Is that a coaching thing, or is that the leadership within that locker room? Where do you think that starts?
I think it's already in the mentality, in the DNA of some guys that they've got there. I mean, you look at some of their key people. Russell Wilson, right, he refuses to give up. He was too short, not good enough, minor league baseball player, whatever. Richard Sherman, who's the mouth of the defense, he was a fifth-round pick. right? He felt like Jim Harbaugh, his college coach, was bad-mouthing the NFL teams and had him slip in the draft. So he's out to get everybody. Marshawn Lynch, right? They didn't want him in Buffalo. Oh, we overdrafted him. He's no good. He's a thug. He gets traded out to Seattle. He feels like the league and the media is out to get him because he doesn't want to talk. So he's got a massive chip on his shoulder. I mean, I think you look at – and then you've got Pete Carroll, who's you know, been doing this forever, is really an expert at it. He still has that college rah-rah vibe that you know, served him so well in USC. But, you know, he's also an expert motivator, and he's got a feel for the pulse of his team. And I think he gets what they feed into, and I think he's a big part of maintaining that as well. So I think it's partly the dynamics and the different personalities they have there. I think partly it's because they play sort of out in Seattle, sort of, you know, out in far edge of the country, and feel like they probably don't get as much attention as they deserve. And it's, you know, it's all just kind of you put that concoction, that potion together, and this is the end result.
What do we know about Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas? You expect both those guys at 100%?
Yeah. Well, close enough to 100% to be an impact. I mean, Sherman practiced fully yesterday. So Earl Thomas didn't, but, you know, they're not going to take any chances with that elbow. They don't want to aggravate anything. But worst case for him is he puts, you know, some sort of jumbo apparatus on there and it makes him look like Superman to protect that thing a little bit. And you know, could it impact him maybe a little bit in his tackling? I guess that's conceivable. But it's not going to stop him from being a ball hawk, from you know, covering the ground that he covers and being a real factor in the back end of that defense. So, no, it looks like they, you know, they're coming out fairly unscathed.
Moving to the coaching carousel, we saw Doug Marrone opt out with an ownership change in Buffalo. Did he overplay his hand, or is he really in a better spot as the O-line and assistant coach in Jacksonville?
No, I mean, I think he could have got similar money to what Rex Ryan got had he stayed in Buffalo. He thought he was going to get the Jets job or the Falcons job, and he ended up really having a choice of maybe joining the Ravens staff as a coordinator, doing this offensive line thing in Jacksonville, or going to Houston being a passing game coordinator for his buddy Bill O'Brien down there. He chose Jacksonville. I mean, look, he's getting $4 million to leave Buffalo, and there's no offset, so he's double dipping. So let's assume he's making $750 as an offensive line coach. He's going to be clearing close to $5 million. The new coach in San Francisco, Jim Tomsula, he's barely making 3.5, and he's a head coach. So nobody's weeping for Marrone. But in terms of his career path and his reputation and how this process unfolded for him this year, I think it was probably sobering and humbling. And, again, I'm told that, you know, Terry Pegula made a real effort to keep him. And once Marrone just said, no, I'm out, that really had the whole thing crumble there, because there was an expectation that if they got Marrone done, that Bill O'Brien, I'm sorry, that Bill Polian was going to come in and be the team president. And that would have been a very different look for the Buffalo Bills than the way they ended up assembled. So, yeah, Marrone, you know, will he be a candidate right away again next year? I think, you know, we'll have to see. He's got a tall task in Jacksonville. They don't have any talent on that offensive line. So if he does a good job there, you know, he might get some attention. But it may take him a couple of years to get back to where he was. And maybe he ends up going back the college route as well.
Great stuff as always, man. We'll get into more of the teeth of it next week as we get set for it. But appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You got it, guys. Thank you.